Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I'm trying to find Craig at the moment, so bear with me here, but while we wait, I guess I will talk with Kirk. Good morning, Kirk.
Good morning, Scott. How you doing?
I'm a little flustered right now, but we're making do.
Other than the stress that you're experiencing at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. So, what's new?
Well, not a whole lot. Keep the show on pace with where we were. Yesterday we were talking about, of course, Galatians, and I went back and reread earlier Chabuk, and I know you're familiar with Chabuk. That's the prophet that talks specifically about Paul. And then I also reread Dabarim, which is known as Deuteronomy. And that, of course, in that, that's where Yahweh describes where Paul is what a false prophet would be. And I tell you, it's staggering. It's absolutely staggering on when you read it on how plain it is on what he says. And then you go through Galatians, as we've been doing step by step and line by line and word by word, for that matter, and recognizing that he misses on every point. I mean, I'm absolutely stunned to go back and read it and believe that all the time that I was a Christian, I believed all that stuff, just took it at face value and said, oh, okay. So,
well, looking back for me, it was, it seems too easy, you know? It should have been very. Whenever something seems too good to be true, mm-hmm. it usually is.
Yeah.
So, and being that for everything Paul said, you don't have to do anything other than just say, "I believe." That's too easy.
Well, he doesn't even believe in Yahweh. I mean, it's not. He never talks about Yahweh. He makes up a different name, a different God. He describes him differently with a different plan, and he obviously knew what the plan was. He was Jewish. He did at least, his mother must have been Jewish. His father, I believe, was Roman citizen, so or at least a Greek who was a Roman citizen. So I can't imagine, I'm pretty sure he was Roman. And you read what, so he obviously knew what the Torah said. He said he studied with the rabbis. They absolutely know what the Torah said. They argue with it all the time. That's the Talmud. But so he just lies outright. He had to make up a new God. I mean, that's, to me, is staggering. And the only way I could have stayed, if I had still been a Christian, if I had read this or heard this, I would have had to just ignore everything that's true. I mean, how do you do that? When you know something is totally true, how do you walk away? I mean, how do you just ignore it?
You shouldn't. You can't.
Well, I know you. Yeah, I just. But people do. Or you just shut down and say no, or I refuse to listen. So, in any case, You want to go about Galatians 2:7 or something? We can go on a little bit, and I can read a little bit to it, and
let's jump into it, and I'll comment where I can. I'm in the process of trying to track down Craig. And,
okay, let me find this section here, and I'll just reread the verse that we've been talking about, so everybody will be up to par when he gets here. And we started off around on 2:1 through 2:4, and the best translation is that Paul says, later through 14 years also, I went up to Jerusalem along with Barnabas, having taken along also Titus. And I went up, but then downward, awkward, I went up, but then downward from uncovering and unveiling revelation, which lays bare, laying down to them the beneficial message which I preach among the races, down from my own uniquely and separately. So, but then to the opinions, presumptions, and suppositions, not somewhat perhaps into foolishness and stupidity, without purpose or falsely, I might run or I ran. That is one long sentence and pretty difficult to grasp until you break it on down. Then we continue on to To the contrary, not even Titus, a Greek being, was compelled, forced, or pressured, necessitated, or obligated to be circumcised. But then on account of the impersonators who faked their relationship, brought in too surreptitiously under false pretenses, who sneaked into the group to secretly spy upon the clandestinely plot against the freedom from conscience and liberation from the constraints of morality that we possess in Christo Iesus, in order that they will actually make subservient controlling for their own needs or their own ends. Having read that, I'm not even sure anybody sane would have written something quite like that, or they certainly are very poor writers. Every time you read the Torah, it's pretty straightforward, and you can certainly understand it and get the gist of it without having to work so hard at it. But we've been covering this for several days, and we'll go on a little bit further in a minute when Yada gets here. But just as a quick review, we have Paul saying that after 14 years, he's been on this mission for 14 years, preaching his so-called gospel, his message to the Gentiles, and it takes him 14 years to go down to Jerusalem, which was not really that far away, in order to meet with the apostles or the disciples who walked with, talked with, and were chosen by Yahusha. And yet he, who claims to be chosen by the same God, which obviously is false, he takes 14 years before he wants to go and meet these people. And then he says he was called to do this, to meet with them. And of course, as we find out much later, as we've been finding out the last few days, is that when he did come down, it was more to try to convince them that he was had the right message, and or to convert them to his way of thinking, which of course we find that they totally rejected, and they totally rejected him. So it takes him 14 years to go down there, and finally, after that, he does acknowledge that he is preaching his own message, his own beneficial message, and he is and is separate from that of the apostles or the disciples' message. And the disciples didn't have a special message. This is what's kind of funny about the whole thing, Scott. They're talking. He's coming out of the blue with an entirely different message, and the disciples, being taught by Yahusha and knowing the Torah, they are teaching the same message that Moshe taught, the same message that we get when we read Abraham, the same plan of, I call it restoration rather than salvation, because it's, salvation is, you can, it's just saving someone from something, whereas restoration is restoring you to a state, a previous state. We are trying to be restored back to the relationship that Adam and Chawa had in the garden. So the plan, the only way to get that restoration, according to Yahweh, is to go down the same path and follow the same sequence of events that he's asked you to do in order to become a child of the covenant, which is delineated very carefully and accurately in the story about Abraham with the five benefits and the five things that you're asked to do in order to walk away, such as walk away from your country, trust Yahweh, learn to learn about what he has to say and what his message is, and also walk towards him and become perfect, and circumcise, and have your, and all the males need to be circumcised. And so,
not difficult to do any of those. You know, it's kind of interesting, Kirk, that the stories in the Torah, they follow one right after another. I mean, you begin with Yahweh announcing that he is the creator, explaining how he created, even why he created the earth. I mean, he's showing that he created this because, first of all, he enjoys the universe. He kind of, it was a creative enterprise. And during the creation process, he says, you know, this is really good. Good means, you know, fun, favorable, enjoyable. It's Tob. And so it was good. And then he created humankind, and he knelt down and loved to lift us up. And he says, hey, you know, that's good, too. Favorable, enjoyable. So he not only tells us, I created, but he tells us why he created, what he got out of it, what his purpose was. Enjoying the universe. You know, you're an artist. You ever just look at one of your paintings and say, you know, that was fun to do, and that's beautiful. That's really good.
Yeah, I enjoy them when it works, when all the magic works. That's good.
Yeah. So that's the first story. The second story is about the relationship that Yahweh has with Adam, and then with Adam and Chawa. It's the story of relationships. You know, he walks with them, talks with them, lifts them up. You know, takes this journey through a discovery, particularly of life, which he finds the most interesting with him, and provides for him. So that's the second story. Boy, now we're getting to a focus point. Then he has a third story. You know, the third story is about Noah and the ark, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so the third story is man had given free will. Given an option not to engage in relationship with God, I took that to a very abusive state. Aggressive, violent, militaristic, deceitful. Abusing their fellow man. And abusing the earth as well. And God said, you know, this is really frustrating. I almost wish I hadn't created the universe. This is so counterproductive. Rather than being fun, this is aggravating. But he found eight people. And he says, you know, I'm going to save these eight people, and I'm going to reboot. I'm going to start all over again. I'm not going to give up on the process. And the method of salvation, did he do what Greece is doing, what the United States is doing, and say, I'm going to give you a welfare program, I'm going to give you free health care, I'm going to give you Social Security, you just hold your hand out, and I'll give you all these things, or... Did
you
have to participate?
You have to build your own boat.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the instructions, but you're going to build the boat. Yeah, in fact, we're going to build it together because I'm going to give you a set of instructions that will lead you through the entire process. I bet that's for a reason. We'll be back. My friend Kirk, Scott, you probably wonder why I was a late join this morning. You guys were doing a fine job. I probably could have stayed away longer, but I've had a wife that has gone through a lot here recently, and she was doing something she found quite frustrating in association with the home we're trying to close on next week in Ohio, and she gave the project to me. To complete, and I did complete it, and then debriefed her on the completion. But I had thought that I had been much more efficient with my time than I had been. It took me a lot longer to do so, and I just lost track of time in the midst of relieving my wife of the irritating burden of yesterday. So it was good that I was doing something favorable for my wife and favorable for her family. It was bad that I lost track of time in the process. But that's the honest answer. Don't have a better excuse than that one. Kirk, though, it strikes me that it was a benefit, however, that you were in the midst of trying to equate the Garden of Eden experience to the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Because this transition, I mean, it's the big frustration that, I mean, I've got 1,000 of them, but one of the biggest frustrations I have with Christians is the stupidity of standing, of even if their New Testament was legitimate, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was inspired by God, and it's not. Even if it wasn't written by a man who was demon-possessed in Paul, but it is. To do what they do, which is to spend all of their time in it, which is now starting at the end, and then never even considering the beginning, they lose the entire context.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're having a discussion with somebody and you jump into the middle of it, what chance do you really have of understanding what they were trying to convey?
So obviously more difficult.
It's almost impossible, isn't it?
Yeah, I just never liked the word salvation as much as I like restoration. Restoration means, in the context of that,
yeah.
What It's a restoring a relationship.
Yeah.
It's not just pulling you out of the water so you don't drown. That's
right. Yeah, save sounds like you were in a horrible predicament, that you were drowning, that you were about to be killed, that you were, you know, you were being assaulted, and that you're a slimy, scummy person without any capability, any resources, and you're being plucked out of a horrible situation. And while part of that may be true, that's not the attitude that Yahweh wants us to view the relationship with. He wants us to recognize that the relationship is really sound. And that he simply wants to restore the relationship, reconcile the relationship would be the better term, and to restore us.
Mm-hmm.
That's a much more comforting kind of thing. Let's reconcile. Let's restore, and then
go back to where it could have been.
Yeah, without this focus on, oh boy, you were just hanging by a thread over the fires of hell.
Mm-hmm.
God's not trying to scare us into a relationship. Salvation is a scary thing. You're being saved from something scary. But the fact is, we're not being saved from something scary. We really aren't.
No.
No, because there is no fire in hell, and we're not going to hell if we're estranged from God. So we're not being saved from something scary. Just that our relationship is being reconciled and we're being restored to a much better condition.
Correct.
Yeah. But this, I want to play off of this idea of the ark.
Okay.
Yahweh didn't build it, did he?
No.
He could have handed Noah the ark, couldn't he?
Yeah, he certainly could. He could have had his malog make it out. Go on.
But did Yahweh present Noah with a full set of instructions? This is how long it's going to be. This is how tall it's going to be. This is how wide it's going to be. This is how many floors it's going to have. This is the kind of material I want you to build it out of. This is how I want you to seal the joints. Didn't he give and thereby pass on to us a full set of instructions? You know, Christians think that he gave the instructions so that we could go look for the ark.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a different reason that he gave the instructions. What do you think?
Well, I like the idea that he gave him everything, absolutely everything he needed to accomplish the task.
Right. And what instructions might we want if we want to accomplish the same task, which is to be restored, to have our family protected by Yahweh? Shouldn't we read his instructions?
Oh, we should read his instruction book, too.
Yeah, follow the same guidance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh is trying to equate this. I provided the instructions and the directions as to how to build this ark. And, which by the way, in Hebrew, means enlightened free will.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's a chest, based upon the concept of enlightened free will.
Mm-hmm.
And now let's compare that to the Ark of the Covenant.
The Covenant, yeah.
And what sits beside it that always remains there to explain it?
The Torah.
Boy, I think we have a connection here. This is a connection I've missed up to this point. How we are being set up for what follows. That the Ark of the Covenant and that we've always known that the ark that Noah built on Yahweh's instructions that saved his family, that restored the relationship that Yahweh had conceived with man as opposed to having eliminated it, that ark, we knew that it was a symbol for the Ark of the Covenant that would follow.
Mm-hmm.
That always made sense, and that the Ark of the Covenant is also a means to keep families not only together, but to bring families into Yah's family.
Mm-hmm.
So for the human family to become part of Yahweh's families with the Ark of the Covenant and the Noah's Ark symbolized.
Yes.
But it never really dawned on me that there's a reason that Yahweh gave the dimensions and the instructions. And, you know, we've covered it before, just that he gave the dimensions to demonstrate that the dimensions that he was outlining were 4,000 years ahead of their time, 5,000 years ahead of their time.
And boat building, absolutely.
Right. So that's pretty cool, but that's not the reason he gave them.
No. Just like the Torah gave us.
Yeah, this notion in Christianity that salvation is a gift and that, you know, you don't do anything, just believe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not true with the covenant.
Absolutely not.
And so the covenant and Noah's Ark, there's a connection there. Yahweh provides the instructions. We have to follow them. If we don't follow the instructions, we don't get protected by the Ark. We don't get protected by and to get benefits of the covenant. Both of them provide this set of instructions, the directions, the guidance. But if we don't follow it, we don't get the benefit.
That's right.
Quite so it's the exact same story, but it gives it to us in a very tangible way.
Yeah.
It's an extraordinarily tangible way with the Ark. So we could see that, all right, you want the benefits of the covenant? You better follow the instructions associated with the covenant. Well, did he provide us with instructions to participate in the covenant, just like he did the instructions on the length, the height, the width of the Ark, the material to build it from, and the material to seal it? Five.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's five instructions associated with that Ark, right?
Right.
This is going to be its length. This is going to be its height. This is going to be its width. This is the material I want you to build it from, that gopher wood. This is the material, and this is the budiman, the pitch that I want you to seal it with. Five basic instructions of that Ark. How many instructions are there regarding participating in the covenant?
Once again, five.
Well, that seems like a connection, doesn't it?
Very good.
Yeah. All right, so we've got five conditions of the covenant. Now, with the Ark, wasn't the Noah's Ark, which was really Yahweh's Ark, built by Noah? They were in a relationship together, right? Doing stuff together.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that Noah, as he's building this ark, is saying, oh, woe is me, you know, that old taskmaster of a god forced me to work all day to build this ark? Or do you think that he was saying, hey, really cool. Can you imagine? I'm talking directly to God. And God's giving me the instructions and the ability to build a ship.
Yeah, right in the middle of the land.
Yeah, well, wouldn't that be cool?
That's pretty cool.
Oh, man, I would love it. Okay, so what was the primary purpose of the Ark?
Is to save the family.
But beyond that, what did the Ark do for the family that all of those others didn't have the benefit of? Let me help you here with this, because maybe I'm off on this, but it just struck me as being consistent. The first condition of the covenant is to walk away from the community of man. Your country, in this case it was Babel, which represents religion and politics, militarism, human institutions. Walk away from that. Well, what was Noah doing? Disassociating from the human family, wasn't it?
Absolutely disassociating from them. Yes, indeed.
Right. So, isn't the very concept of the Ark of the covenant? Isn't the very and the covenant itself and Noah's Ark? Isn't the primary purpose exactly the same? That they were going to be separated from the human family by following Yahweh's instructions and a family that is being based upon a relationship with him.
Absolutely. That is quite profound when you put it that way. And it's exactly the same story. I've always said,
right.
You know, and I probably said this to you a couple of times, is the more I study this, the more I see the same story told 100 different ways. It's over and over. And always comes out. It always comes out the same if you look at it.
Right. And it's fun to see the reinforcing threads. Okay, the second condition of the covenant. You know, the second condition is to trust and rely on Yahweh. What was Noah doing?
Well, he has to trust him, because, I mean, it's almost absurd to be there. Remember, he's not near a giant body of water.
No. Right? No.
He's a land lover.
You know, Lake Van may have been there. Lake Van would have been, you know, maybe 75 to 100 miles away. He's building, and Lake Van is way too small a lake for a supertanker.
Yeah,
so he's building a super tanker, you know, and you know, probably 100 miles away from the nearest significant body of water, and even that body of water. In fact, if you look at an ocean, he's building this thing 1,000 miles from the nearest ocean.
Right.
Okay, the Mediterranean would be from where he is. The Mediterranean would only be west through Turkey.
Right.
And at this point, the Black and Caspian Seas are tiny. They're freshwater. They're landlocked.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea didn't become salt water until the consequence of the flood. It's the flood that turned them into salt water, and it's the flood that created the exit for the Black Sea through the Bosphorus Straits. Okay, so you would have to an extreme extent. So not only are you separating yourself, because he's leaving all those rest of those people. I'm going to do this, and he's trusting and with Yahweh in doing it, because he's relying on all of Yahweh's instructions. I don't hear one time where he said, come on, Yahweh. You know, we've got, rather than building this thing out of wood, I want to build it out of stone. rather than using pitch, that stuff is yucky. Let's use wax. Let's use wax. I see him taking Yahweh's instructions. Yahweh said, you know, that's longer than I really want to go. But my wife wants it to be, she likes tall ceilings. Can we build a little taller?
And marble. We need marble tops.
Yeah, I want marble countertop. Do you hear Noah at any place saying, rather than relying on your instructions, rather than trusting your dimensions, how about we make a little compromise here?
Not once.
So he's trusting and relying on Yahweh's instructions. Isn't that totally. Now we've got totally. The first two conditions of the covenant?
Right.
Okay. The third condition of the covenant is walk to me and become perfect.
Perfect. Right.
Which is a celebration of Pesach, Matzah, Bukkudim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, followed by Sukkah. You're going to end up in my home. You're going to start through the doorway that is Passover. You're going to be, once you're inside of this, you're going to be cleansed on Matzah, become part of my family on Bukkudim, empowered and enriched on Shavuah. You're going to be a troubadour for my message on Teruah and on Kippurim. All is going to be reconciled so that you can camp out with me in my home on Sukkah. That's how you walk to and become perfect, right?
I mean, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Would you see a connection with the ark?
Verbatim.
Yeah. We see some connections?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Didn't God go into great detail about when he was supposed to go through that doorway?
Absolutely. This is the time.
Right. And he didn't say, you know, I want you to go through that doorway anytime you want. I'm not even going to speak to you about the portal. You know, I don't give a hoot how you get into this ark. In fact, why don't you just forget about the whole concept of a doorway? You just climb up above. You put up a really long ladder.
No,
he went into real detail on that doorway, didn't he?
Are you sure?
And didn't he tell him, this is the time, right now, I want you to... It wasn't even raining, was it?
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is really something.
Yeah. Now I want you to get in that doorway. And what happened after he got in that doorway? It started to pour, didn't it? Which water the symbol of?
Cleansing.
What happens on Matzah?
Matzah, you get cleansed. Right. All your sins go away.
Right. And now, inside of that, didn't Yahweh adopt Noah and the eight members of his family?
Everybody's the family now.
Right. And throughout this whole process of the time they were on this, 40 days and 40 nights on the on this, which gets us, by the way, really close to his celebration time of Shavuah, which is, it's 7/7, 49. But you notice that 40, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, but he didn't get out of the ark in 40 days, did he?
No, he's got to release some of the birds to find the land and all that sort of thing. So that's a few days, probably right up to 50 days, don't you think?
Yeah, well, it only has to be 40, the 49 days from Bukkudim. It's 50 days from Matzah, 49 days from Bukkudim, right?
Yeah. From Sabbath to Sabbath,
There you go. And so they're... They're enriched and empowered with a cleansed and been beautified, scrubbed, no longer poisoned world right there on Shibuah. And didn't they, as a result, become the troubadour to explain the covenant?
For every generation afterwards, certainly.
You betcha. Didn't even Yahweh say with this rainbow that this is a sign of my covenant?
Mm-hmm.
So didn't he tell us to look at this as a sign of the covenant? How come you and I didn't do that before? I'm glad we're doing it now.
We slow.
If I wasn't engaged doing the honeydews this morning and joined you as you were explaining the connection between these things, I'm not sure I'd still get it. But it's a sign of the covenant. And now does Yahweh say, I'm putting this rainbow because I'm never going to do this again. So wasn't our relationship reconciled?
Reconciled. It doesn't have
Isn't
to be
that important?
That would be
right.
Perfect, wouldn't it?
Right.
Wouldn't it? Mm-hmm.
Right. And here they were now, established in Yahweh's home, completely reconciled. Back to the conditions in the Garden of Eden. Perfect. Reconciled.
Cool.
It's walk to me and become perfect. Talak means a lot more than walk. Come to me and become perfect. Kirk, do you recall what the fourth condition is to participate in the covenant?
The fourth is to walk to and become perfect?
No, the third is to walk to and become perfect.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the first is to walk away from Babel, from confusion, from your country, from religion and politics. So to walk away from human institutions, which, of course, Noah and his family were doing. The second is to trust and rely.
Carefully examine. And then,
that's right.
Carefully.
Exactly. Yeah, the second is to trust and rely upon Yahweh, which is exactly what Noah and his family chose to do.
Yeah,
by disassociating. They didn't, it's and these things are needed to be their thumb and fingers, if you will, to have a grip. If you just have the fingers and you don't have the thumb, you can't really grip anything. The thumb is the in this case is the opposition force, and it's the walk away from human institutions. The fingers that follow are they give you the ability to grasp hold of Yahweh's hand. But it's one thing to walk away from religion and politics. There's a lot of people now that are beginning to walk away from politics and from religion and from militarism. They know all those institutions are corrupt. And while that's a good start, until you come to know, trust, and rely upon Yahweh, you're better off than you were when you were engaged in religion and politics, but you're not home.
Mm-hmm.
So you need both. It's not only walk away from, but then walk to, so that you trust and rely upon Yahweh, which is what Abraham did, and it's what Noah and his family did. Okay, and the third, of course, is to walk to me and become perfect. And halak means a lot. I'm using walk here, and we're comparing it to a boat. Understand in Hebrew, halak means it's chart a course through life.
Mm-hmm.
Move from one place to another.
Right.
So, move away from your country. Chart a path through life that is trusting and relying on me. Navigate to perfection. And so this doorway, he entered the doorway that's Passover. And then the rains came, which represents the cleansing nature of matzah. And then he and his family were part of Yahweh's covenant family. Now, he's unique, separated unto him. And they were enriched and empowered on Shibuah 49 days later. And they became the ultimate troubadour because Yahweh even announced, you are now a sign of the covenant. So that brings us to the fourth condition for participating in the covenant, which is what?
Well, to carefully examine, continually study, mm-hmm. Yahweh's mm-hmm. covenant agreement.
Yes. And what did Yahweh provide for us in this regard when he said, see this rainbow here?
Mm-hmm.
That's a sign of this covenant.
Right.
So he told us, now observe this. Isn't that what he's telling us? Is observe this, because I'm telling you this is a sign of this covenant, and this covenant happens to be a perfect match for the one that he established with Abraham?
Yeah. Pay attention, Kirk.
Pay attention, Kirk. Yeah, I've got this rainbow here to remind you. Isn't the rainbow here to remind us about this covenant very similar to the concept of I've come up with circumcision as a sign of the covenant because that's how you're going to be born onto this. Didn't Noah's family get born onto this by the very aspect of the flood?
Mm-hmm.
That was the how they and so the end of the flood was the rainbow. The sun came out, there was the end of the flood, there was the rainbow. That's the sign. So the end of you of your reproducing after humankind's and reproducing onto Yahweh's family is to cut off the end of that same curved another curved edifice the male genitalia.
Yeah.
Maybe. That's the sign. So it's exactly the same sequence all the way through. Separate your family to become part of Yahweh's family. This is the sign. So it strikes me we have a direct fit in these stories. And then what's the story after Noah? Immediately after Noah, what's the next story?
Well, then the big story is Abraham.
That's it. And that story goes on. That story is told with more information than these previous three stories by probably five times.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. It's a big, big part of Yahweh's agenda, is to tell that story.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? After that story, which presents the terms and the benefits of the covenant, the purpose of the covenant, God getting to crescendo of what he's all about, he then tells the story of Yosef.
Right.
And how Yosef got all muddled and tangled with Egypt, didn't he?
Yes, indeed.
Forecasting a number of things.
Don't go back.
Mm-hmm.